Hey, fundamental Christian, what's on your mind? I bet you're troubled by this world, lots of things going awry, some stuff that angers you, eh? And you really believe what you believe, and you believe that the stuff others believe is dangerous, almost like the devil has taken them captive to do his will. Well, I got a verse for you. It says, "The Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful. Opponents must be gently instructed in the hope that God will grant them repentance, leading them to a knowledge of the truth that you have, and that they will come to their senses and escape from the trap of the devil who's taken them captive to do his will." Oh, hey, look out. What's up? Deconstructed liberal Richard Rohr, Rachel Held Evans, Christian. Rest in peace. What's on your mind? So I bet you're troubled by this world. Lots of things going awry. Some stuff that angers you, eh? And you really believe the stuff that you believe. And you really believe what others believe is dangerous. Almost like the devil has taken them captive to do his will. I got a verse for you. Paul says to Timothy, "And the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful. Opponents must be gently instructed in the hope that God will grant them repentance, leading them to a knowledge of the truth, and that they will come to their senses and escape from the trap of the devil, who has taken them captive to do his will."
I like demanded, pleaded, called God on promises and was like, "You have to show up or like I am done." And he did. And he did.
That's something to really think about. What does it mean that the God of the universe loves me?
Are we saying that our God is bigger than their God or what?
Man, you got my mind going crazy right now.
I just think that that is evangelical bullshit.
And I don't fit in their box anymore. So feeling rejected from the church makes me feel far away from God.
If I'm living out the love of God, love of the divine, then in some ways we're unoffendable.
It's wrong to marginalize anybody for any reason.
Sometimes we can just have some things about our perspective that's off until we encounter someone who can challenge our thoughts, have conversations with us, and we just continue to grow and evolve.
I'm with you there. I like that.
That sounded like womp, 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 womp to rob you.
I'm a hardcore gospel lover. I do love the gospel. I just think we get it wrong.
Girl, I was so highly medicated, I don't even know if you
Oh, God, my people.
All right, what's up, everyone? I get to talk to a fellow podcaster today, Corey Nathan. He hosts Talking Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other podcast. We both want to see people be able to talk about politics and religion without killing each other. So Corey combines his expertise from multiple ventures ranging from entrepreneurial firms to creative media companies to 501c3s with his life experience converting from Judaism to Christianity and deep interest in being a politically engaged citizen to have productive dialogue about contentious topics in politics and religion. He's deeply passionate about taking back space in the public square from the screamers and extremists who've taken it over. I love a terminology he uses to describe folks like him and I, people who certainly lean in directions, but more than anything, we want to learn how to humanize and love people, even our enemies, while both extremes are just yelling and ramping up. Home team, the exhausted majority, as he calls it. I love that. We're either just plain tuckered out by the division or maybe scared to open our mouths because we're not extreme enough for either side to even like us. And maybe that's actually what Jesus was talking about when he said they'd hate us on account of his name. Jesus loved everybody, wanted to show everyone that love no matter what. That's what I want to do too. And if that makes anyone mad, I'll be good with that. Hey, check out the show notes so you can follow Corey and check out his podcast. I love you. And there's also a link to be a supporter of this podcast, man. A measly $5 and you get some perks, including some extra content. You enjoy the show. Oh, and I also get to hear from someone, Corey, who thinks Biden is a good president. Yeah, that's dope. I just thought everyone thought he was like really, really too old to be doing this. It was really interesting to hear that. Corey, good to have you on here, man. So hey, and full disclosure, man, I want to go ahead and just go right out there and confess to everyone that it is 2 p.m. and you and I were scheduled for 1:30 and you are gracious. You're still doing this talk and I am recognizing, man, age is catching up with me. I don't know if we're about the same age, but I'm 46. You literally emailed me today confirming. I was like, yes. And I check my email. I see, and you're like, "Hey, man, I'm on here, and I'm waiting, and I'm in the middle of organizing my questions." I'm thinking, "Oh, I'm working ahead." I'm like, "Oh my gosh!"
Well, not for nothing, but at 1:29 your time, I had all brown hair. Now it's all gray, so I was really worried about it.
Where are you, by the way? Where do you live?
I'm in Southern California, about 30 miles north of LA. One of the purplest districts. If we're going to get into politics, I'll just say it. We're one of the purplest districts in the country. Republican U.S. House member, Mike Garcia, won in 2020 by 333 votes out of 340,000 plus that were cast.
Man.
So really closely held district that I'm in.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think a really good starting place, considering what you and I are going to be talking about, is I really don't know anything about you other than just a little bit of research and knowing about your podcast. And, you know, I was telling you earlier that you and I for sure get excited about the same things when it comes to being able to have discussions. I'll get to this here in a second, but yeah. We actually had two episodes with the head guy from Westboro Baptist. So If that's any indication of us really trying to have conversations with people we don't agree with, that would fit right in line. But like you have a podcast and it is talking politics and religion without killing each other. What else do you do with your life? What do you got going on? You're a family man, married, divorced, none of my damn business. Like, tell us about yourself.
None of your damn business. No, I've been married to Miss Lisa for over 26 years. We got three offspring. One is almost 23 and that's Savannah Rose. Savannah's up in Humboldt. The boys are still with us. Jackie Boy is 20 and then Emerson's 18, about to be 19 in about 2 weeks.
So did you grow up in a very traditional Jewish family where you guys practiced and did all the stuff? That shows how educated I am about Judaism. You know, all the stuff.
All the stuff. Well, yeah, we kept what's called kosher in the house. Right. So we had two separate sets of dishes. We didn't mix milk with meat. You know, didn't have ham, stuff like that. We went to Sabbath services. We called them Shabbos on Friday night and Saturday morning. I went to Hebrew school from the time that I was 3 years old, JCC through kindergarten and Hebrew, I even extended past my bar mitzvah, Hebrew high school, Orthodox synagogue. So yeah, we did all this. What did you say? All this stuff.
Yeah. And am I accurate to say that Judaism is very special from a standpoint of it's one of the only religions where it's so connected to the bloodline of just, hey, I'm not only a believing Jew, I am Jewish in my blood. But then you also have Jewish converts who would say, hey, I'm Jewish from a religious and belief perspective, but hey, I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico and grew up in a Christian family, but I'm now Jewish.
That's pretty close, because no matter what I do, no matter what I believe or, you know, what church I go to or what have you, I'm still Jewish.
Right.
My mother was Jewish. My father was Jewish. My ancestry was Jewish for thousands of years. There's nothing that I could do to not be Jewish. And sometimes that's great. It's a special blessing if you're, you know, if you believe in something more transcendent, which I obviously do. But sometimes historically, that's a great burden to bear. You know, so if God forbid some sort of a Hitler or new Hitler came back, I am Jewish enough to kill, no matter how much I profess my belief in Jesus Christ, which I do. But, So that's part of it. There are others, though. If you read in Torah, there's always been ways. It's not just grafting in. It's folks who want to be a part of the Israelites. There are ways to become a part of our people. It's almost like in the marriage ceremony. I am yours and you are mine. We are, you know, we are one kind of a thing. It's not just grafting in. You become a part and one within our people. So
right. Which makes my next question very interesting. So now that you ascribe, and correct me if any of this is inaccurate, but now that you ascribe to a Christian faith and we consider yourself a Christian, like you just said, like what you just unpacked, would you tell someone else, hey, I'm Jewish, I'm a practicing Christian, but there's an element that I'll always be Jewish also? Like how do you ascribe to Judaism at this point? Is it just a family connection?
Well, it's definitely a family connection, but there are lots of ways from the time that I became a Christian that we've stayed very much in practice Jewish. So for example, as you can imagine, my father and I in particular, lots of family members had issues with me becoming a Christian, but my father in particular. And it wasn't too long after that we started having kids. When the boys were born, we decided to have Brit Milah, bris for each of the boys. And that was, I'm going to get, you know, emotional talking about it if I talk about it too much, but it was one of the ways I could honor my father and honor my grandfather, honor the people who came before me. And there wasn't anything in that ritual that was counter to Jesus. You know, I had already been studying Paul's letters quite a bit at that point, and I just felt this is a way. You know, this is a way for me to connect in a very special way with my father and emphasize the relationship over the doctrine or over a particular theology that clearly we disagreed on. So that's just one. But every year, one of my favorite times of year is Passover. We still have the Seder to this day. And it's a way to tell our story of who we are as a people to my children and eventually to their children. But it's also a way to include our friends, our neighbors, people from church have come and joined us. Good dear friends from church have come and joined us, you know, and we're not doing the colonized version of the Seder that I've had to suffer through once or twice. That is, well, that's cute that the Jews still do this thing called the Seder, you know, and then they say, but it's really about Jesus. Now listen, nothing against folks who have good intentions with all that, but it just makes me want to puke even thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us how you really think about that though.
I'm a Jew from Jersey, man. I'm going to tell you what I think.
That's right. So for me, I would say a little bit of my journey is I grew up very, very fundamentalist. If the 20 years ago version of Joey would think that current Joey is very dangerous, I'd probably be mad at current Joey. I would probably think that nobody should listen to current Joey. Like some of the things that I feel very strongly about when it comes to just being open to other people, open to having dialogue and conversations and willing to learn from people that you don't agree with. I didn't live the first half, if not more, of my life with, because I was taught to do the exact opposite. I was taught, hey, things that don't line up with what we've taught you in this Christian faith, they're dangerous. They could lead you astray. And if it affects your faith is what gets you into heaven. So it was just a very problematic, hey, I can't afford to be wrong and much less hang around other people that are wrong. It was as bad as I used to repent of my sins after lunch break because I wasn't witnessing enough. I mean, it was that bad sort of
thing. Oh, man.
And so once I started to grow out of a lot of the toxicity that I had been raised in the church, I'd say that I started to deconstruct a lot of the churchy religious stuff, but like Jesus, still believe. And then my beliefs started to change a lot. And we don't, this episode's not about me. I want to hear from you, but just to kind of give you a picture, you know, now most people would see me as, oh, wow, that's some real progressive thinking. And a lot of my evangelical brothers and sisters would say that, hey, maybe even some of my beliefs are problematic. I am positioned where my church of now 20 plus years, I feel like they have the sort of posture that I can get down with. There's a lot of very important things that I do not agree with when it comes to the church family I'm a part of, but the sort of loving approach to fellow man, having conversations where we can agree to disagree and still love each other, they are very much so on that agenda. And so I'm down with them. I feel like they are doing their best to live by the gospel. And I think what makes it even more special is they know a lot of what many people would say my heretical beliefs are, but they're like, we know that guy, we know he believes in Jesus. And so we can be one, you know? Yeah. And so being in that world, and then I was in a podcast called Bad Christian back in the day that really took off and was like a big thing. And we talked to a bunch of different people with different beliefs, and it really changed, I think, my outlook on scripture and faith and all of that. And so I see firsthand very evangelical, hell, let's even say fundamentalists, who are doing their best to love as Jesus would. And I would say, hey, they're failing just like I am, and they're succeeding just like I am. And then I know and am friends with very more progressive, liberally minded Christians who I would say the same thing about. But then I hear both sides demonize the other. And it's like, whoa, wait a second. There are good people, great intentions everywhere you look. And so all the podcasts that I'm involved in, it's pretty much what I talk about. It's just interwoven to all the conversations, and that is what your very podcast is all about. And so I'm curious, how did you get to a place where you're just like, dadgummit, I want to do a whole podcast that centers around being able to come together and have conversations, not demonize each other, not hate each other, not wanting to kill each other. Like, how did you get so excited about that? Like I am.
Well, there's a lot that you said there that I'd love to pick up on. One is the first church that we started going to, it took me about a decade to realize, man, this theology is really brittle. And, mm-hmm. and on an individual basis, the brittle nature of that theology leads to all kinds of ungodliness, frankly. So if my salvation, if my eternal relationship with God and God's presence is contingent upon me declaring and firmly holding onto the literal 24-hour, 7-day creation story, man, right. you ain't reading Genesis 1 and 2 very well, you know, let right. alone 3 through Revelation 22. You know, so that's part of it. Part of it is just I can't shake my perspective as a Jew. I was just thinking somebody was really exhorting me, man, you're not placing enough emphasis on this young earth creation thing. And I'm thinking, I know my people, man. And if there was 2 million or so people at the foot of Mount Sinai and they heard the Lord's voice, from the source itself, and he got to the day part, not a single one of them 2 million Jews, my people, said, I wonder if he means a literal 24-hour day. So right. That's part of it. That's part of it. I just, yeah. Again,
is you're educated and you know.
Yeah. Part of it is I'm getting more crusty. I'm just getting more irritable, irascible. The older, the
you're
going
to have to change your
I
podcast
get.
Name. Eventually you're going to have to be like, but sometimes I want to kill people.
Sometimes I want to kill people. I just do. But you know, the other thing is in reading the very Jewish story that's accounted in the Gospels, it's a very Jewish story, man. And like, what an awesome rabbi, what an awesome teacher that would put together his first class, his first set of disciples. And in that little tiny class of 12, there would be, you know, the son of this one and the brother of that one, but then Matthew the tax collector and Judas the zealot. You know, mm-hmm. like, yeah. Talk about two people from two. That's like that's like Republican versus Democrat on steroids. Like Absolutely. They already got their guns out, you know?
Absolutely.
So I think about that. I also think about when you look into one of the first long sermons that, or, you know, we think of it as a Devar Torah in Judaism, what's called the Sermon on the Mount. You don't get too far into it. And he's saying, look, if you have a problem with your brother, you got to settle that. Don't bring sacrifices to the temple, you know, or just before that, when he's talking about saying ugly things about people that you don't like, you know? So I'm distilling it down, and hopefully nobody will hold it against me for not quoting the King James version or the, you know, the original Aramaic and Greek or whatever. But that's the thing, man. It's like I've been able to think about over the last 20 something years is a lot of what I was grappling with when I first became a Christian. I realized that when I went back to tell my dad that I believe that Jesus is Messiah, that I believe in a risen Lord, right? What I was risking was one of the most important relationships in my life. So my work there, and I'm so glad and grateful that my dad came to a similar conclusion that his relationship with his son was more important than a particular, albeit really, really important fundamental piece of theology, right? So the relational over the transactional, the relational over the positional, if you will, like we hold these positions, even on stuff as important as abortion. Oh, well, I can't talk to you. You don't think life starts at conception. No. Jesus had people in there. A lot of that first Devar Torah, the Sermon on the Mount, was about relationships and repairing relationships and emphasizing, prioritizing relationships over saying, well, you have to feel this way about the Romans. Well, you have to feel this way about the taxation. Nah, it was all about relationships, man. So that's what it was to me. Like I couldn't have articulated it in 2000 when I, you know, or 2001, that first year or so. But I realized even going into the church, what I did realize was that there were a lot of people I was hanging with, people in my Bible study, who actually did prioritize their Republican identity in that case. Yeah. A lot, like it was 95% to 99% Republicans. In fact, in the 2004 election, I was dear friends with Pastor Tom Givens, who subsequently passed away. But I was only joking with him. I went to him after a sermon one day and I said, hey, Pastor Tom, I'm not sure if you saw it, but there's a John Kerry bumper sticker in the parking lot. And he goes, Corey, you're joking with me, but I've already received a dozen emails saying, Pastor Tom, what are we going to do about this? You know? So the long answer to the question is I realized that people in the church had other commitments, other priorities over and above who they were as Christians. Yeah. They wouldn't have said it that way, but the deal was I had to figure out how to have tough conversations about important issues with my dad about religion, with my brothers and sisters in the church about politics. And more than any other issue, we needed to figure out how to do this better. You know, and certainly the last 7-8 years has certainly underscored that. So that's how it all came about.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned 2004. So just to give you a reference point of my journey, and like I said, you're further down the road than I am. And what you just said proves that is 2004, I would have been absolutely devastated if John Kerry won that election. It was very much so connected to my faith. It was just like, you can't be a Christian and vote any other way because of abortion and the gay issue and all of that. Like, so that's where I was in 2004. Let me ask you this, because this is where the compassion side of me comes out. And I'm like, man, the problem makes sense though, because I'm a Christian and I believe that quite frankly, these words aren't always helpful, but our listeners will know what I'm talking about. I mean, quite frankly, I think there's some more liberally wired beliefs that are unhealthy and conservatively wired beliefs that are unhealthy. But usually I'm going to say, man, some of those conservative beliefs, that's just unhealthy. I would say some of them dangerous. Now, here's the thing. Some of those very conservative Christians would look at me and evaluate me in the same way. And so now we are falling into this. So I think this is what our culture is teaching us, and it's not a good thing. And that is like, well, if you're morally wrong about something, then people are likely going to get hurt by actions stemming from your beliefs, which thus means you're bad. Like if you have a belief and bad actions come from those beliefs, well, that makes you a bad person. That's harmful for other people. And so even though I do see it pretty clearly, dadgummit, we just need to love each other. I also understand how can we not fight and be angry when we're talking about moral stuff that to us, and it's right because it doesn't hurt people. That's wrong because it does hurt people. That does make it more complicated. And I understand where people are coming from when they feel like they have to draw a line in the sand. I think it's coming from a place of, hey, I want to do what's right, and I want to help the world. I don't want to hurt it. And it's just, it's very ironic that sometimes we do way more damage than good when it comes to our simple beliefs.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Do you think that's a part of the problem is because it's tied to moral stuff that we feel strongly about?
Oh, absolutely. So there's a couple things there that I want to pull on that thread a little bit. One is if I've had these conversations, and one of the first questions I want to use is to clarify is, are we talking about the beliefs that inevitably lead to these bad actions, or are we talking about some sort of abuse or warped version of those beliefs that lead to these actions? Because I don't want to have to defend turf that I'm not standing on. You know, we could look at it historically, historical atrocities. Oh, well, if you're a Christian, you believe in the Crusades and you believe in the Inquisition and you believe in, you know, all kinds of historic atrocities. I said, and I just don't want to have to defend that turf, nor do I on a more contemporary level. If I say, you know, I really sympathize with folks who are in mourning, who are in pain, in the George, you know, when George Floyd was murdered. Well, what about all these people who are looting? And listen, man, I get it. You know, if we want to get into that, we could talk about the numbers, and what you're doing here is nut picking. You're talking about 94% of those protests were entirely nonviolent. And of the 6% that were, it was a small percentage of people who got violent, and those individuals should be prosecuted. But you're drawing a direct connection between my sympathy, my desire to be an ally for and a friend to those who are in mourning over Black bodies being killed. We gotta kind of clear some brush before we can really talk about this issue. So let's not nutpick and talk about the abuse of certain beliefs or that sort of, like I said, that nutpicking. But the other thing I'll do, and I think I ultimately want to get here, it's something that Braver Angels is all about. A great organization is all about.
Would you say Braver Angels?
Braver Angels. It's a terrific organization that really wants to figure out how to allow for people of all different viewpoints to share space and to have better conversations like these. One of the keys is to start with that person's humanity, not to start to ask them questions as a way to interrogate, as a way to get to dismissing them and their views and dehumanizing them, but to remember them, bring them back into membership with you, into your neighborly membership, right? And that is to remember their humanity by saying, that's interesting. I don't think that way, but I'm curious about you. Tell me about your life. Tell me how you arrived at that position. Tell me how you obviously feel strongly about it. Tell me about your life. Tell me about, you know, your trajectory of how you got there and certain things that happened to you. Now, all of a sudden, what you're doing is you're opening up a story. Or as Van Hooser, Kevin Van Hooser once said, the Bible is a story, and that story is still being written, and we're in it. Mm-hmm. So if you open up someone to their story, now you're humanizing them instead of dehumanizing them. And you're allowing for that, what Jesus was talking about all through chapter 5, 6, and 7. Right? Of the Matthew, of our humanity together and how we live together and how we redeem relationships, right? So that's ultimately what I want to do. There's certain things that folks typically throw at us because they're listening to whoever, Dan Bongino or Ben Shapiro, and they're rehearsing it in their minds all day, every day. You know, well, we got to clear some of that brush so we get to that question of, tell me about you, man. Why do you feel that way? What happened in your life that brought you to that conclusion? That's interesting. Yeah.
So referencing back to the conversations I had with the, and I should have looked to see what his actual name is. So sorry, I'll keep calling him the Westboro guy. But you know, I thought through those conversations, and he, I mean, here's the conflicts that I was having personally is, I, you know, cheesy as it may sound, I believe I really do have a pastor's heart. I don't think everybody has it, and I don't think that's a good or bad thing. It's just a blessing and a curse. Like, I really care about people. And so I'm talking to this guy whose beliefs are absolutely disgusting, but there were things about his personality that I also found very endearing. It's kind of like an old bastard of a grandfather that you're just like, yeah, but you gotta love us grandpa, you know. But just me saying that to you, knowing that this is going to be heard by my listenership, almost makes me uneasy. It's like, oh, no, you can't like that guy. And so then I took the thought experience a little further. I'm like, what if we found out that him and I had a mutual liking of some obscure hobby, and after our conversation he's just like, you know, Joey, I think you're full of shit, but that's really cool that you collect such and such, man. Can I get your number? Because I'd like to text. I mean, if people found out that I had a friendly relationship with this guy about football cards, but there would be people who'd be like, I cannot listen to that guy anymore. Like, yeah. I'm not listening to his podcast. How dare he associates with somebody else and calls him friend? But then I go back and I'm like, wait a second, I thought that's exactly, as far as Christians are concerned, I thought that's exactly what we were called to do. And so now when I think endearing of this guy, it makes me go back to the word you use, and that's humanizing. And I'm like, I think I'm on to something good. I'm not approving of his beliefs. I think they're disgusting. I don't want him to be persuasive of anybody else, but am I a bad person for being like, there's some stuff about him that I like?
Man, we got to...
It's scary to say that out loud, man.
Well, here's the thing. I think that if we look at the stories of the Bible, if we look at the gospel stories in particular, and we understand the historical context, how many times was Jesus hanging out with somebody and the disciples were like, what are you doing talking to that? And, or the little kids, hey, get away. And Jesus is like, let them come to me. No, let's hang out. Going to... a Samaritan, going to, you know, hanging out with women, hanging out with whores, hanging out with tax collectors, you know, hanging out with Pharisees. The parties this dude had were like with all the wrong people. But that's like, if you understood the historical context of who those people were, it wasn't like, I was joking about Yankee fans. I forget if we were already recording at that point, but like, I'm a diehard Mets fan. And like, you know, that's the least of it. You could be in a bar in New York and like, we're having it out about whether the 86 Mets were better than the 96 Yankees. You know, I'll have that conversation all day, every day, and it's heated, but you know, we're still hanging out at that bar. But if you go to the Bible study, the Sunday school class that me and Lisa went to when our kids were just being born, and that was a better part of a decade, you couldn't say, huh, this Barack Obama guy, huh, he's pretty interesting. I heard his testimony in a backyard barbecue and it sounded, you couldn't say that, you could just say that out loud and not be shamed for it. That's a serious game you're playing, right? You know, and now you fast forward 15 years later and it's even worse. So there are people literally moving. Like we're like putting the sorting thing, the geo sorting thing on steroids. We're forgetting what Jesus did. Jesus going to the people. Jesus going to the people that you, someone would have been ashamed to associate with. Let's do more of that.
And when I think of, and I know I'm not Jesus, so I didn't create people. When I look at this Westboro guy, I don't see a son that I love and who I created, but I can't imagine Jesus asking me to treat this guy any different than how Jesus would. And I can't imagine Jesus not being kind and not being able to see through the eyes of love, and even to the degree of being like, I pity in a very merciful way the darkness that's got to be in your heart to carry yourself like this. Like, I can't imagine Jesus not having that mercy and obviously being willing to speak directly against hatred and all of that sort of thing. But I think I would be called to try to do what Jesus does.
Here's the thing, man. Not to let you off the hook too much, but you know, we're called to be like Jesus, but thank goodness we don't have to be Jesus.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, for sure.
And then there comes a time that we all have our limits, right? So, you know, he will give you the way, like no temptation has overtaken you, but such is common to man. He'll give you the way, right? But it'll also, you also got to trust your limitations. Like there are some people, I had a fella on, a brilliant scholar about the history of conservatism, wrote this great book, a conversation between, or like he kind of constructed a conversation between Edmund Burke and Thomas Paine, this guy named Yuval Levin. But even as somebody as erudite as that has been around so many different people, Yuval said, you know, it was before Thanksgiving that we're talking. And he said, you know, sometimes you just got to say, I really strongly disagree with you. Now pass the gravy. Just yeah. Get it, you know, be over it. You know, just yeah. So you do have to know your limitations, man. And listen, the thing is, I don't want to have any false pretenses here. Like I don't do this show because I'm the expert at talking to politics and religion without killing each other. I do it because I suck at it. I'm just terrible at it. You said shit before. I lose my shit. Yeah. Sometimes I just lose it, you know? So I'm doing it because I need to work on it more than anybody. So
yeah. No, that's good. Yeah. Do you think that I was dabbling in I couldn't tell you if you asked, but I was dabbling with an episode on a podcast that you were on, somebody else's, and y'all were talking about what I think is a very important question to ask. And I have guesses, but I don't have the data. And I think you may have more knowledge of this, but it seems as if people like you and I are the minority. It's just like, hey, we see both extremes and we're like, hey, but let's get us all talking because at the end of the day, we'll see each other's humanity and man, we got to figure this out. We got to love our enemies. We got to really do this sort of thing. Are you and I the minority in wanting to see people come together, but all the loud mouths are the majority? Or would you say it's the opposite? Like most people can use maybe a little common sense and logic to realize, hey, we're not gonna agree on the important stuff. We better figure out how to coexist.
So I think that we are in the majority, but we're an exhausted, silenced majority. So dang. There was a very, very extensive study
you
done.
You said exhaustive.
Exhausted and silenced majority.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was a very extensive study done by the Common Ground Committee, and the sample size was literally in the tens of thousands over the course of several years. And what they found was that the extremes, what we think of, I don't like the right left that illustration
sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but because it's not sufficient, but just for simplicity's sake. They use that terminology. So they found that about 5 to 6% of folks on the right would be really what we would consider highly engaged and highly extreme. And then they found about 6 or 7% on the left, highly engaged, highly extreme. So people who are listening to Dan Bongino on the right and thinking, yeah, 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 every day, like listening to him all, you know, all 3 hours or however long his podcast radio show is, same on the left. So that's like about 15% or less that are on the extremes. The rest of us are exhausted and either completely disengaged because we just don't have the brain space and emotional space for it, or we're engaged, but we feel like we can't speak up, like me in that Sunday school class. You know, when a dude came in and talked about the evils of the UN and Al Gore, and he's possessed by demons into our freaking Sunday school class. You know, I didn't feel like I could speak up in that class because everybody else is, oh yeah, Al Gore, he's possessed by demons. You know, he wants to save the planet. Oh, that's bad. You know?
Right.
So it is the extremes. But here's the thing, man. I'm hopeful and afraid all at the same time. Anxious at the same time. I'm hopeful because every conversation I get in is another opportunity to do one degree of good, right? And there's a lot that's contingent upon that, but we can get into that if you like. But there's an opportunity, one person, one relationship, one conversation at a time to do one degree of good, right? And to heal this disease, because it is a disease. It's a societal disease.
So, Bick, let me ask you this. I love that, and I've got to teach myself how to focus in on that. Do you have any level of confidence in the bigger picture healing of, let's just say, unity in the church. You know, I do want to get into politics just a little bit before we wrap up, but unity as a country, I think I'm more pessimistic and I'm like, that ship has sailed. Like our country is not going to come together. The question is, how bad does this get?
So it's a similar answer to where I was going before.
Yeah.
Big picture, there's more reasons to be pessimistic for a lot of reasons, like the geo-sorting that I mentioned before. The more that we hang out with people that think like us and vote like us, the more extreme our own views will tend to get. So that 15% that I was talking about before, that could definitely swell because if we're not hanging out with people that we have to figure out how to still be a neighbor across our differences, or even, Uncle, Joe at Thanksgiving, and we just don't invite Uncle Joe anymore. The more Joe hangs out with his extreme buddies and gets even more extreme. So there's that. I also think that bigger picture, yeah, a lot, if you just like take the stat of like, would you be open to political violence if things didn't go your way? And people who identify as left or right, again, I don't like that illustration, but for simplicity purposes, it's a big number. It's not an insignificant, it's like in the 40% for both. Wow. So it's that they would be open to political willing violence. Damn. You know, as well as how we see folks who vote a certain way. We don't just see them as people having differences. We see them as evil, and them as evil. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, I'm a Jew. I mean, my grandmother came from what was called Russia. It's Chernyostrov, Ukraine. So I know that my people survived the Russian Empire. They survived the Bolsheviks. They survived the Cossacks. They survived they survived a lot. And then before that, thousands of years, the Holocaust, 6 million of our people gone, decimated. So, the Inquisition, but our people are still here after the Babylonians, after the Persians, after the Romans, after all that, all this, we're still here. So we might have to go through a lot, but there's something that I really believe in. I don't wish this upon us, but if the real example is our constitutional democratic republic somehow disintegrates because some asshat don't want to accept the reality of an election, and then all millions of people follow them down that path,
that's happened before. What are you talking about?
then that's all right. It'll affect us. We'll have to go through turmoil, but our people are still here. We figured out how to survive through all kinds of other stuff. This isn't a given.
Yeah.
So yep. I don't want us to have to go through that. I want to continue with this experiment, with this constitutional experiment that's been going on for 250 years.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, if it disintegrates for one reason or another, even violently, that's all right. That's all right. We'll still be here. The church will still be here. The Jews will still be here.
Yeah. I've thought about this, that it's, to me, somewhat hypocritical, because if you really believe deeply, you in general, if people believe very deeply in what makes them angry towards people who disagree, like if you're that passionate to where it angers you to hear people who don't believe in you, wouldn't you think the most admirable, productive thing would be to say, how can I get the other side to understand where I'm coming from? Because this is important. But it's like, no, we'll just go asshole mode and nobody's ever going to lit. Like it seems very hypocritical. Hey, if you really care about what you say, you so vehemently believe and you think it's so important for other people to believe, carry yourself in a way that maybe could be persuasive to people who don't agree with you already.
Yeah.
You're just pissing them off because you're being a jerk. Like it really does seem kind of messed up.
I'll give you a quick story about Jackie Boy. So of my three kids, Jackie Boy was already 18, I guess, at the time, or maybe he was about to be 18. And it was when the vaccines were coming out. And he wasn't like anti-vax out of the gate, but he was vaccine skeptical. So everybody in the family, including me, went into asshole mode. We I was like, oh, you want to kill grandma and grandpa? Oh, that's terrible. You're a terrible person. We just dogpile on a rabbit. And what that did was it turned him from vaccine skeptical to absolutely dug his heels in, anti-vax all the way. And then a few months later, I approached him a completely different way. He didn't want to talk about it, understandably, because he got, mentally, emotionally, rhetorically beat up the first time around. But I said, Jack, hold on. I just want to talk to you, man. Like, why did you feel that way? He's like, oh man, well, at first I just didn't want to be like an experiment. I didn't want to be part of the lab, you know, part of the test group. And that's all I was thinking. I, you know, once it was approved by FDA, I probably would have been more open to it. And I understood his thinking. Now, I didn't, by doing that, I didn't convince him to get the vaccine, but it was just like one degree. And it came up because we were doing this family vacation with my three best friends that I grew up with around New Year's that year. And at least he would get tested. Like everybody else, there were, I think, 19 people total at this trip that we went on for New Year's. And he was the only one that didn't get vaccinated. And I talked about it with my buddies. And they were like, they had a problem with it because everybody went and did the vaccine and the follow-up and all that, except for Jack. So the compromise that we came up with is before he gets there, take a certain kind of test, with more efficacy. If he tests negative, cool. Like if I didn't have that conversation of like, hey, tell me how you feel. Tell me why you think that way. If I didn't even have that conversation and give him the space to be heard, he probably wouldn't even got the test, you know? So I can't snap my fingers and make everybody who thinks that the election was stolen come to their senses and realize that no, this was most secure election in American history, but I can have one degree of influence if, and this is the thing about the conversation between me and Jackie Boy, if I'm open to the possibility of being persuaded myself, if I approach it with the posture of leaving room for the possibility that at a certain point I might say, huh, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. All right. Two more questions. Little fictitious scenario. Let's say I'll pick on Nikki Haley. Let's say she says that, hey, you know, enough of this political stuff. I don't have anything bad to, I don't want to spend any time saying anything bad about Trump. I don't want to say anything bad about the Democrats. Obviously, I disagree with some stuff, agree with some stuff. Here's what I want to do. Here's the things that I think I can change. By the way, I'm going to be the first president who not only says it, but I'm going to do everything I can to listen to the other side. In a debate, let's say she's the Republican nominee and she will not play fire with fire. She will not return an insult for an insult. She's like, you know, and just carries herself how we've never seen anyone carry themselves at that high level of competition in the political realm. Does she have a chance to win? Does a person like that have a chance to win who's not going to play the polarity political game? I don't know if somebody like that has a prayer, and it's shocking. So that last debate between Biden and Trump, I firmly believe if Trump would have carried himself like a gentleman, was not a middle school asshole, I think, first of all, he would have won. I think that if Biden would have stopped talking every single time Trump interrupted and said, hey, listen, I just can't do this. If he's going to interrupt, I'm going to just be quiet and I'll let him talk. People would be like, that's a freaking hero. Biden is the man, you know, but Biden got caught up in it and was, you know, was calling Trump names and all of that. And I thought, imagine if we had a third party there who just was like, yeah, I don't have anything negative to say to these guys. Here's what I want to bring to the table for our country. I think the third party would have won 4 years ago. I mean, that's a real ignorant statement, but is there room for people who don't want to play the political card?
So I do think there is. In fact, I believe, and I study this stuff now. I have some, I'm not an expert, but I have some friends that I've become friendly with over the last 4 years that are experts at this, that know this better than anybody out there. And I do believe that if Nikki Haley somehow pulled what we call in poker, the one outer, cause that's about the chance that she has of winning the Republican nomination, then she would win in a landslide. I think she would win in a landslide.
Educate me. What did you just mean there? A one outer? What do you mean?
So in No Limit Hold'em, you're playing some cards and everybody goes all in. They push their stacks all in. You know, and you have only one card in the entire deck that if it comes out on the river or, you know, on the turn or the river, that you win. So there are some hands that you have where you have like 14 cards that can make your hand to turn you into a winner. And then every once in a while, you have a one or two outer, you know, or a more common phrase is the inside straight. That's more than a one outer, actually. It's usually a three outer, but
Yeah, stay away from sin and gambling and all that shit. So
let me tell you something, man. I am a Christian, but I'm a Christian who curses and plays poker, and I like me some whiskey.
Yeah. I'm kidding, man. I just never, you would tear me up in poker because I don't know what I'm doing. But yeah, so I'm sorry. Now that you've explained, continue your thoughts.
So here's the thing, too, though. I am still leaving space if Nikki Haley does win the nomination, because a lot of folks who lean to the left or far left, Democratic, progressive, liberal, what have you, they don't like a lot of the rhetoric that Nikki Haley has engaged in because they disagree with a lot of her policies. They disagree with what sounds like flip-flopping and catering and putting on a different face for a different audience. I'm just leaving a lot of room because I know that the Republican nomination is a different thing. It's like watching Mitt Romney in 2012. He had to win the Republican nomination before he could switch to the general. So I'm still giving her a lot of grace to do what she needs to do to win this thing, because I think only somebody like Nikki Haley can cure the other major political party. If Donald Trump continues as the leader of that party, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. We need loyal opposition, right, in order for a healthy democracy to work. So I'm kind of rooting for her for no other reason than that. But here's the thing. What you described as somebody really listening to the supposed other side, we've had 3 years of that. If you look at every major piece of legislation that's passed, and an historic amount of major legislation has passed in the Biden administration. But what is it? The bipartisan infrastructure, the gun legislation that was led by John Cornyn, a staunch Republican from Texas, CHIPS, that was another bipartisan piece of legislation. The furthest left that he got in terms of legislators legislating was Manchin, who's about the most conservative Democrat in the Senate, who led the thing that keeps certain drug prices down and did some things that were bipartisan in terms of the environment. Even the last fiscal cliff last spring, who was that led by? A former Speaker Kevin McCarthy. So Biden has gotten a lot of major pieces of legislation done by allowing the Republicans in either the House or, you know, mostly in the Senate to lead negotiations. This latest thing with immigration, the Senate Republicans are leading that. They had this checklist. Well, we got to do this, 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 and this. Biden's like, yep, okay, let's do it. You know, so we got that. So I'm a big fan of what's happened. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're a fan of Biden and what he's accomplished, and would he be good for a second term? I mean, I love that conversation.
Yeah, I am a fan of Biden because it takes a Biden to be able to, he's the center of the Democratic Party. So if you have a Trump, God forbid, then the extremes or the excesses on the left, the Ilhan Omars, you can't combat the Ilhan Omars by beating them up, but you can work with them and mitigate some of their excesses as a Biden can mitigate some of their excesses, like what we've seen since October 7th is very close to home for me. You know, so he can mitigate some of their excesses. That's bad for progressivism as a whole, frankly. But Trump's not going to do that. He's only going to make them worse. He's going to turn them into monsters monsters from that perspective. And, you know, I think they'll if their excesses are given the fuel of that kind of violent opposition, they really do turn into monsters.
Yeah. So, do you think that a family or a group of friends, but let's just say a family, an extended family, aunts, uncles, grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, brothers, sisters, and all of that, and lots of different ranges of beliefs, let's just say in the political realm, should that family feel defeated if they say, we love each other, we're a family unit? But man, we just don't have the tools to talk about this stuff. It just always goes awry. And for a family to choose, hey, we are still together. We love each other dearly, even though we know what each other believes. We can't talk about it, though, because it's just not any good for us. Like, should that be a deflating thing? Or should that be, no, you should be encouraged that you guys can choose unity. And if you can't talk about that stuff, that's fine.
Yeah. So it depends on the individual. For me, I am never going to get, I'm not going to cede that ground to the loudest, most obnoxious voice in the room. So if there is somebody at our Seder table, like I was talking about before, that's loud and obnoxious and saying all kinds of things, whether it's pro MAGA or, you know, whatever, something as extreme, in terms of the squad, you know, I'm not going to cede that ground just because everybody else at the table just doesn't want to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it. That said, if my sister-in-law or my son's girlfriend, they just don't want to talk about it, I'm not going to impose myself on them. I'm not going to make them talk about it. So everybody's got to make their own decisions. My own feeling, though, is politics and religion is how we live among each other. If we ain't talking about it, somebody else is. And that's what we were talking about in terms of the exhausted majority, the exhausted, silenced majority. Why does it feel like everything is so heated and extreme? Is because we've ceded the ground to the extremers and the screamers and the extremists. So I don't want to cede that ground. I want to take some of it back. That's why I'm going to keep talking about it, but I'm not going to make you talk about it. So
yeah, that's good, man. Well, cool. Yeah. Tell our listeners how they can continue listening to you.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah, man.
One thing for folks who are in the church that want some encouragement, this isn't my organization, but there's a couple, or we mentioned Braver Angels. There's one that is emerging in the church that I really believe in, people with such great integrity. It's called The After Party. Curtis Chang, David French, and Dr. Russell Moore have gotten together, and there's books and there's support materials. So again, I am not part of that organization. But I'm friendly with a lot of the folks that have started it, and I can't wait to learn more about it. But everything I've seen so far is really encouraging and gives us the equipment to have these tough conversations. That's one thing. But again, I'm not a part of it, so I'm not hawking any books or anything. You can find me. The easiest way to find the podcast is politicsandreligion.us, all spelled out, politicsandreligion.us. You know, if you look on your apps, it's just talking without the G, TALKIN. Apostrophe politics, and it'll come up pretty quick. Or you can find me at Corey S. Nathan at Corey S as in Sam Nathan at Corey S. Nathan.
Awesome. Well, dude, I was just telling somebody this yesterday that podcasting for this long, you know, in situations like this, I have no idea what I'm getting into. And dude, there's been times where you start a podcast conversation and I hate saying this because
you're like, oh man, I can't share this.
You know, but this has happened before where I start talking, I'm like, oh gosh, like I don't even want to talk anymore. This is going to be so hard. Yeah. Do they even want to have a conversation? This has been awesome. Like it's been.
Oh, I thought you were going to go the other way. You're going to be like, sorry, dude, you're not going to hear this anywhere.
No, are you serious? You thought I would say that to you on air? Oh my gosh. No, but I just, it's been one of those conversations where to me, this is what podcasting is all about. I would have wanted to talk to you if it was just the two of us. So I count it a privilege to be able to air it and let other people. So I appreciate the conversation just between the two of us, man.
I appreciate it, Joey. Hey, are you based up in Wisconsin? I see the Favre poster up there.
Charleston, baby. Charleston.
South Carolina?
Yep. As a sixth grader, I don't know why, but I just chose. I said, I want my own NFL team. I like the Packer colors.
All right.
And every year I used to ask my dad, hey, are the Packers are they going to be any good this year? And he's just like, Joey, they're just a really, really bad team. That would be good for a really long time. And then Brett Favre, Reggie White, and yeah. Next thing you know, got another Super Bowl.
So. That's awesome. I just asked because if you're ever in SoCal or I'm in the Carolinas, we'll have to look each other up and grab that beer and maybe play some poker or something.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, man.